Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Today, I get to talk to Han Suk Cho, someone who has been working in the alcohol-free cocktail space for quite some time, starting up in Sonoma, which is a bit of a challenge to get people who drink wine all day to drink an alcohol-free beverage. And she's currently at Cato in Los Angeles, a place that earned a Michelin star this year, in part because of its amazing beverage program. Her contributions are in the non-alcoholic realm, and we're going to talk about how she creates those, along with Zero Proof, her line of sodas that she's got going as an alternative to cocktails. If you want something alcohol-free, that is the theme for the show today. And also, growing up in Korea and composing music, because she's been playing music since she was 3 years old. So we have a lot to talk about, and we're back in the bar, so it's going to be noisy at first, but you'll get used to it.
My name is Han Suk Cho, you can call me Han, and I am a lead bartender at Cato. Cato is a Taiwanese American tasting menu restaurant in downtown LA with one Michelin star, and we just were named as the best restaurant in Los Angeles from LA Times.
Was it number one?
Yes.
Wow, I didn't hear that. That restaurant has a lot of accolades behind it, though.
We've been very blessed with our
partner. Even when it was small, I think it was still very recognized.
Yeah.
And now it's in a new location. Mm-hmm. It was a couple years, I think, in this new location.
Yeah, it's been, in February, it's going to be exactly 2 years since we moved to the bigger location. Lots of learning curve, and it's been tough, but we're still doing it.
Have you been with it since it got bigger and was able to have an alcoholic and non-alcoholic program?
Yeah, I joined about 4 months after they moved to
the new location.
Yeah, and I started as a server.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where we call it as a captain position. Mm-hmm. And I saw our bar director, Austin Hennelly, how he works, and I just love his style. Mm-hmm. And prior to Cato, I didn't have any formal bartending experiences, and I just went up to Austin and told him that I want to be a bartender at some point in my life, and I want to be trained by him.
Wow. But I feel like that's not completely true. I mean, you've been in kitchens before you started this.
Yeah.
And you were already pairing.
So
say non-alcoholic cocktails now, but to me, you were already pairing drinks with food. They just were like alcoholic drinks.
Yeah, so I had beverage experience in non-alcoholic era. And before that I was working in the kitchen for many years.
So the 20 kitchen, years?
For many years.
Oh, many
yeah,
years.
Not 10 years,
yeah,
just yet. But about
10
years.
Yeah.
And the kitchen experience definitely like transferred to, you know, lots of beverage making skills, mm-hmm. and also like some front of house experience like helped me to become, you know, adopt the skills to be a bartender. Mm-hmm. So it all kind of came into the one place.
It's really fascinating to me that you started in the kitchen first.
Yeah.
And you not only, I mean, you've worked not just at this restaurant, but you've worked in previous restaurants that have been nationally recognized as well. And yeah. you were in the kitchens in those other places, yet how did you get to a place where you could say, you know, I think we need to pair a beverage with this meal? I mean, you hear about this in certain kinds of restaurants, but you're doing this and a lot of people just assume wine, right?
Yeah.
They go somewhere and they think, oh, it's a food and wine pairing. Mm-hmm. I myself can't really drink wine. It gives me headaches. So if I go to a place with pairing, I usually just say no to the pairing mm-hmm. and just stick with the food, which is always fantastic in an omakase style yeah. place, something. But if I had an option to have either cocktails or non-alcoholic yeah. cocktails, I would jump at that.
Yeah.
So how did you make that happen?
So I always had like the curiosity when it comes to non-alcoholic beverages, because my mother doesn't drink alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in Korea, alcohol is a very big part of the culture. And mm-hmm. if you don't drink alcohol, you're
weird.
Yeah,
you're
often,
out.
Yeah, yeah, treated as an outcast.
I think that's pretty universal, honestly.
Yeah, true.
I mean,
yeah.
It's people who, until recently, I feel like people who don't drink need to give an excuse as to why.
Yeah.
Are you pregnant? Are you an alcoholic? Why do you not drink? It's like yeah. they get on the defensive immediately
yeah.
instead of just saying, I just don't drink.
Yeah.
But people always want to know why. They don't yeah. understand. So and, your yeah. mom went through that as well.
Yeah, and she had like so many different reasons, but she also thought, you know, it's nobody's business. So she would always, yeah, just drink
it's
water.
True.
Yeah. And, you know, watching her, you know, being so strong about, you know, that and, you know, and not being treated kind of unequally to mm-hmm. others, mm-hmm. I wanted to create something that is alcohol-free and still delicious and still is like adult beverages.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were doing this for other people at the restaurants that you were at.
Yes. So I think 2017. That's when I first dined at this restaurant called Single Thread Farms mm-hmm. in Hillsborough, Sonoma, and they already had an alcohol-free pairing program.
Oh,
yeah, which was very like early.
That's very early.
Yeah, yeah, there was not many restaurants who were offering at the time, and then once I tried it, it kind of like, you know, all my memories and urges really clicked and really wanted to be that person who creates them. So I decided to get a job there and mm-hmm. I convinced the management that I can be a good person to do this, and they gave me the job.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing, because in less than 5 minutes you said twice that you decided you wanted to do this and then you went and did it.
Yeah.
And I don't know that a lot of people have the wherewithal to do something like that. They don't always chase it right away. And that's amazing, because I hope anybody listening, this is very hopeful.
Yeah, but sometimes you just have to be confident and, you know, mm-hmm. ask what you want and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you might not be the perfect person for that position, but, you know, you just fake it till you make it.
Absolutely. And we're here in LA, which is where you are now too, so we are the epicenter of fake it till you make
yeah.
it. So at some point, you were at Single Thread for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and were you in the kitchen first before you started beverage? Or
I was in the front of the house, like in-room okay. dining team first,
okay.
and then I went to the, like,
and then you got behind the bar, as it were.
Yeah.
But even then, it was non-alcoholic stuff
mm-hmm.
that
yeah,
you were doing.
Yeah, non-alcoholic only, and once I took the chance, I was like, I cannot disappoint these people.
Yeah, right?
So I worked really hard.
And it's
really
in Healdsburg. That's
yeah.
like the epicenter of that foodie culture in Northern
yeah.
California.
And you know, it's like a wine country.
Yeah.
I really want to create something that people who come here to drink wine
mm-hmm.
to want to have my pairing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I try to make it as pretty as possible, as mm-hmm. delicious as possible, using a lot of Sonoma ingredients, and eventually, like, the sales went really well. Like, yeah. 30% of the pairing sales were alcohol-free pairing in
That's
wine
amazing.
Country.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was kind of wondering if maybe people were wine tasting during the day, and when they get in yeah. for the evening, when they see an option like that, and it mm-hmm. looks really appetizing, and it's all fancy, because they're all fancy eating, yeah. you know, up in Sonoma and all of that, that maybe it's like, oh, I won't have a terrible hangover tomorrow.
Yeah.
I can try something else that's and also been specialty made. Right.
And I'll choose, like, you know, really fancy glassware mm-hmm. that is, you know, very different than wine glasses, yep. just yep. to, you know, make it look extra pretty.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about presentation,
yeah.
you know, just to guide people in. So at some point during this, you also started your own line of non-alcoholic stuff.
Yes.
And this is just yours, right?
It is solely yeah. mine.
And are you, you're still doing that, right?
Yeah.
So when did you start? It's Zero Proof?
Yeah, it's called Zero Proof. Mm-hmm. And so when I worked at Single Thread, so many guests kind of encouraged me to, you know, bottle things I make.
Oh.
And I saw, like, more and more people not drinking alcohol mm-hmm. as time went by. So in 2020, in the beginning of pandemic,
yeah. the perfect time to start experimenting with
yeah,
stuff
exactly.
like that.
I started bottling my beverages and sharing with my, like, friends and family who doesn't drink alcohol, and mm-hmm. started, like, just selling, like, little by little, mm-hmm. and then got really popular amongst people who I know. And I started getting comments for a kitchen, and actually started, like, selling to the restaurants. And right now we're in about 7 restaurants in LA, mm-hmm. and I'm very proud and love all those places.
That's amazing. Do you plan on taking it elsewhere, or is right now it's just a little thing that you can handle and you're not ready yet to expand?
I am slowly getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a project to do something like
it
that.
It is.
For
and
sure.
I'm trying to do it, you know, as, like, you know, choose putting as little money as possible.
Yeah.
You know?
yeah, there's that.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, taking my time to do it right.
Yeah. yeah. So you've been in the non-alcoholic space longer than a lot of people. I mean, there are bartenders who, I think, for a while have offered non-alcoholic versions of drinks they've done, but it's few and far between, right? Or maybe there'll be one drink on the menu. You've bartended with alcohol as well, right?
Yeah, so right now it's been about a year since I start, like, alcoholic bartending.
Yeah. But at Cato, you're doing the bartending. However, you created the non-alcoholic program.
I didn't create the program at Cato,
okay.
but I am part of it. Yeah, it's a collaboration between me and Austin.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if, like, he had reign over the mm-hmm. ones with booze, and then you had reign with the ones without booze.
So, funny enough, both of us don't drink alcohol.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was like, it really aligned our, you know, thought that we want to create really good mm-hmm. alcohol-free pairing that we want to drink ourselves. So we're always, you know, just brainstorming and talking to make, you know, better drinks. Mm-hmm. I mean, just as much as alcoholic drinks.
Yeah. So for you, and this is not to sound like the reflection of what we just spoke of, but was not drinking a decision you made a long time ago, or was it just something at some point you're like, nah, it's not for me? Or
I actually recently stopped drinking alcohol. It's been about a year. Mm-hmm. And yeah, a year ago, I had some health crisis, mm-hmm. and yeah, my doctor was like, you have to stop drinking alcohol.
Oh,
like,
oh no!
Done. Yeah.
Well, at least you know exactly how to handle that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been, you know, not easy, but also I feel very privileged to be able to, you know, be a bartender and not drinking alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, like, taste everything that goes in
well, yeah,
and goes
yeah.
out, but...
But you're not swallowing.
Yeah, I'm not swallowing.
And the thing is you, I think we're in a time now where our head bartender at my bar was a non-alcoholic. She was not a drinker. And I'm not sure how long she'd not been drinking, but she ran our bar for 5 years, you know, so, and she'd been not drinking long before that.
Yeah.
So I know quite a few people in the industry who have, for quite some time, not been drinkers. you know, or they just stopped with alcohol, but still did all the competitions and still did all the things. And that makes me really happy because it just shows everyone, like, you don't have to. You know, it just shows there can be healthy relationships around alcohol.
Yeah, you know? That's how I feel too. Like, since I stopped drinking alcohol, I've been having, you know, not just physically healthy, mm-hmm. but been having healthy relationship, mm-hmm. you know, mentally and with my career, mm-hmm. and that's very special.
Well, you know, something, and this is kind of, I'm jumping way back, because I know that your career has kind of steadily risen, but you, I don't remember if this was back in Korea, but you are a composer too.
Yeah.
And to me, I've always seen a link between, and part of this, of course, is because I love music. I've worked in the music industry forever. And as I mentioned to you earlier, so many people I knew in bands, after a while, wound up becoming these fantastic bartenders or chefs or something. And they likened those collaborations as being in a band. They liken that creativity as writing something whole and complete, starting from the beginning and finishing it, and how that is. So you obviously are musical, and have you always been musical?
Yeah, so my history with music started really early. Mm-hmm. I started playing piano when I was 3 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we had a piano at home, and my mom knew how to read music, so mm-hmm. she started teaching me little by little, and I started taking, like, formal private lessons when I was 4.
So I don't know if you would remember this far back, maybe because you were training. Did you want to do that, or was that like a family thing? I know a lot of people who their families play piano, so they had to start playing piano when they were little, and then later were like, but I really love trumpet.
Well, I actually liked like piano, mm-hmm. and I remember when I was like 4, like asking my mom that I want to do this.
Oh, really?
And I think, and she like told me that she thought it was too early for me, so she was
like, you're
like,
so small, your hands on the keyboards. I would think that would have been challenging to be able to reach everything.
Yeah, and I just remember having like so much fun. It's
really?
Like it's like playing with toys.
Oh,
yeah,
that's so cool. Yeah. So, do you still play piano?
I still do. Aww. Yeah, it's like something I do to like meditate sometimes, or you know, keep myself calm, or you know, to get inspired.
I could absolutely see that. So, as you got older, what kind of path did your music take with you? I mean,
it went so many different ways. So I played piano, and at some point I played violin.
Oh wow.
And when I got into middle school, I just got inspired by rock music.
Oh, because I'm like, it sounds very classical up until now.
And then I got really hooked on playing electric guitar.
Oh really?
Yeah. And at the time, the person who was giving me lessons, he introduced me to like Jimi Hendrix, Jeff Beck, and like Pink Floyd. And because I had some classical training, mm-hmm. I had pretty good ears by then.
Yeah, so, I would think so.
Yeah, by age 15, I transcribed all Jimi Hendrix songs by through guitar. And just... It's alright, she said, it's alright.
Classical kind of the foundation anyhow? Like if you understand classical music, it seems like you can understand anything pretty much.
I think it makes it easier to move on to like different instruments. Mm-hmm.
And the various genres that are out there in the world, I would think as well.
Yeah, and you know, also like classical music is so technique driven that it teaches you the, you know, that sweet, you know, juice of the, you know, the result of practicing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You can hear the perfection,
right?
But sometimes aren't the flaws what make it interesting?
Yeah.
You know, if you hear something and it's got a squeak, and I'm thinking more in terms of non-classical music, because I mean, classical music is so refined and perfect that those flaws aren't allowed to come up. But in other kinds of music, when you hear someone squeak at just the right moment, there's something human and charming about that that makes it more endearing. Whereas, but classical music can make you cry or make you mad. Or
It's very different, like, emotions.
It is, and it's interesting to me because it can do it without words, and I'm kind of a word person. And if they do it right, it's almost like it forces you to have these emotions. You know?
And that's what I find the like similarity with like music and food. You know, food and drinks is, you know, there are without words too. And when things are right, when you taste.
Oh, you were so right.
Yeah.
I've definitely taken a bite of something and just been like, oh, what is happening to me right now? Well, you've talked too about, I mean, they say that the strongest like sensory, like memory senses are like taste and smell, you know, those kind of things. And you've talked about that too, and like kind of evoking a feeling with a taste and how hard you work to do that. I think more for yourself and the things that you remember, but it translates over, like other people have these feelings too.
That's like I'm not good with words per se, and that's why like my like creative outlets has been like music and food, you know, try to communicate my emotions in like more subtle way.
That's probably why it's so good.
Yeah.
Like all of it, honestly, you can feel. I have, again, many musician friends, and when they write a song, that then becomes kind of a big song, and they have to play it every time. I'll ask them, does it still have the same meaning to you? And they'll say, no, it belongs to them now. But they sort of absorb what they're getting back.
Yeah.
You know, there's that. And I think that also happens with food. Once it's out there, your memory is not that person's memory who's tasting the pine. You know, that it's a pine liqueur you've created or something. And for me, I would think of Northern California and my hikes up there. Or something, or maybe like being near the ocean there and rocky beaches. And for you, you think of your childhood, you know, so there's something for everyone in that.
There's like universal like feeling of, you know, that nostalgia, like that slight pain and slight joy together. And I just love to bring someone to that memory.
That's just, it's wild that you've been able to do that, but it makes me think of all the times that someone will say like, oh, the best pie I ever had was when my grandmother made. And that's not because everyone's grandmother is the only person on the planet that can make a great pie. It's because they made that pie with love for their families. You know, I might taste it and be like, it's fine. Tastes like a great pie. I want to go back to when you were saying you were transcribing Jimi Hendrix, you know, for yourself. And how old were you when you were doing this?
I was like 14, 15.
Wow, okay, so you're a super nerd in the musical side
super
of things.
Nerd,
Well, nerds are the best because then they create amazing things, right?
Yeah, I'm a proud nerd.
Yeah, totally. Me too, big time. So what took you, that sounds like a natural segue into composing. Because it sounds like you really liked to break apart the songs. And just hear all the pieces and kind of break them all out.
And I was just interested in so many like instruments at the same time, and I love the like ensemble. I love bringing different musicians together. And to be also honest, I was never like a virtuoso in one instrument. You know, I was never like good at one thing, but I like to, you know, dabble different things and feel differently. So I got into like composing, just to like play around with, you know, other and like collaborate with other musicians.
So what was composing for you? What kind of music were you creating?
I was creating mostly like classical chamber music.
That sounds big. When you were saying you weren't a virtuoso in anything, I can relate to that because I've worked in music my whole life, and I've always just music. I've just been that nerd. And at the same time, people ask me always, you must know everything. You must know everything there is to know about music. I'm like, no, that's not possible. There's so much music out there that I like to say that's like when you skip a rock across a pond. If you can do it, you might get like five skips out of it or something, right? Well, I'm like that with music. I can bounce across all these genres, but I only go really deep with some. And every time I do one of these podcasts, I learn something. Every single time. And I'm so grateful for that because it stays exciting, you know? It stays super exciting. So I like that you took that, you're like, you like these, all these instruments and all these styles, and said, all right, let's do chamber ensembles. I can play with everyone that way. So what kind of stuff, I mean, you're doing that, but you had to have had performances and things.
I'm just not a performer.
Well, no, but of your music,
of
the stuff that you did. Were you studying this when you were at university?
Yeah, I was studying composition in Korea, and then I moved to the States and studied some here.
So what, when you were doing that, they're classical pieces. So what kind of classical composers, or were you not looking at classical composers at that time? I'm assuming that you grew up listening to a lot of classical.
Yeah.
So what kind of pieces were inspiring you when you were making your music?
Lots of like Maurice Ravel. Mm-hmm. I really liked Romantic era and early 20th century classical music. Like, you know, just like anybody in their early 20s, I had a lot of anger in so many different things, you know.
That's what our 20s are for.
Yeah.
We know everything and we hate everybody.
Yeah. And I was never been like good at writing or expressing it. Mm-hmm. So like writing music was my way to express those angers. And to me, like flute and piano always worked.
Yeah. Flute and piano, angry flute and piano.
I mean, it doesn't really sound angry, but that was like my way of anger.
Well, I'm trying to envision it because it could still sound passionate.
Yeah.
And passion can go in a couple different directions.
Yeah.
I mean, crimes of passion is a thing. So.
Yeah, also, you know, like, I think a lot of times anger and sadness is related. So I like to show, like, starting with anger and end with some sadness and loneliness.
I think those are also musical moods that can universally strike a chord in such a way. You know, if it's done properly, it can just come on. I've definitely heard something I've never heard before and found myself crying at the end. You know, just because I'm feeling that. And a friend of mine, he has a chord he calls the cry chord because he swears that if he throws it into a song, that will make someone cry. Just one certain sound.
Yeah.
And you know those chords?
Yeah, I have those like little riffs that makes, you know, someone cry or make someone like, click to their memory.
It's something, he says it's like a certain note in a certain register. He thinks that it's almost like the kind of thing where it just hits people on a level that they don't realize that it hits them. Almost like a dog whistle to a dog, only they can hear it and they react to it. There are certain notes that humans just respond to by nature for some reason.
Yeah.
So did you stumble across that, you think?
Definitely. Yeah. So the latest piece I wrote was about 10 years ago. There was a huge accident in Korea where a ferry sank.
I remember that.
Yeah, in the ferry there was 200 high school students and they all, you know,
insanely tragic.
Yeah.
So tragic.
Tragedy, and there was not much, the government, you know, didn't much do anything, and I was just like so sad and upset about the incident, and that was the latest piece I wrote about that incident, and you know, sometimes when you're writing about something really angry and sad, it's really hard to get out of it.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. You can just sink into that. You have to have someone lift you out.
Yeah.
Or you have to turn around and watch something stupid on television.
Yeah. And I was, you know, just like, you know, just staying depressed even after the piece was
finished. Well, that's because it had consumed you for quite some time, right?
Yeah.
And so you wrote the piece. Did you ever get to see it performed?
I did.
Yeah.
I did some of my friends performing and recorded, and I think I was just crying the whole time. And, you know, even though I wasn't related to any of them, it was just such a...
But that's a national tragedy.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that when something like that happens and you felt it could have been prevented or there could have been better things in place,
yeah,
it hurts everyone because it could have been anyone.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of innocent people, especially in this case, innocent kids.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's upsetting. I mean...
Yeah.
And you feel like it could have been me, you know? It
totally.
Could have been my friends. It totally. Could have been my cousins,
yeah,
you know? So... Are you still composing today at all?
Do you think so? After writing that piece,
yeah,
I've been having a hard time going back to it because it really consumes my emotions. And I have chronic depression. So
you don't want to put yourself back in a place that might be dangerous.
Yeah, so I'm trying not to like put myself, you know, get more depressed, but but also writing music about something happy doesn't hit the same, you know. So
isn't that always the case though?
Yeah.
It's too bad. It's it's almost like listening to a happy song is fun for that second, but it's almost like a piece of candy, the taste goes away.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And maybe because I have some depression too, when I hear the sad ones, the angry ones, those are the ones that are like embedded in my brain.
Yeah.
And I can pull them up anytime.
Yeah.
Well, I can pull up happy songs too if I need them, but those other ones, they're the ones that wind up on the playlist.
Yeah. Bad memories, they stick with you longer.
They do.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think, and this almost sounds like you writing this piece about that tragedy, sometimes when you write it, it can purge it somewhat, it can cleanse it. But it was still difficult to do. So when you listen to it, it's more the depression than that particular incident, you know? And it takes on a different life.
Yeah.
So
that's
kind
of thing. I'm glad that I wrote because it feels like, you know, everybody had to do something to not make that incident get forgotten.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because the government needs to be reminded. I could leave it there.
Yeah.
So this, since you aren't writing as much, you still enjoy your music, you're not creating it as much, do you feel like that's very much channeled into what you're doing now with these creations that you're making?
Yeah, I'm very thankful that I have other different creative outlets to, you know, bring my creativity.
And I would think these probably make you feel a bit more positive.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, creating food and drink has been always positive, you know? Like the sadness and, you know, depressed or anxiety, you know, doesn't really go with food and drinks.
I think some people in the hospitality would argue that.
Yeah.
But I think it depends on what, I think, you know, I think almost what you're saying, I think is almost universally, if someone gets that drink or gets that piece of food and you see that person reacting positively to it, you're just like, oh good, it works.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't much so much of an ego thing as that you just made that person happy.
Yeah, it's like making someone happy makes you happy.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you don't, they don't even have to see your face or anything or like call your name to say you're the best.
Yeah,
you
they
know?
Don't even have to know that I'm the one who created that drink. I just, you know, see it and that's all I need.
Yeah, so I know pairing is a big part of your world. I know you've listened to some of these podcasts, so I have to ask about music and drink pairings.
Yeah.
I always ask people, like, you know, what are you listening to? What are you drinking? But since you've been doing pairings for, like, years, I'm hoping that you can come up with some good ones for this. So I don't know if it's a piece of music and one of your cocktails. Because you're probably going to have to describe that cocktail to me to go with it because they are such unique creations.
Mm-hmm.
Your stuff is not something that, as far as I know, really is turning up in books just yet.
Mm.
I'm sure people have, because, you know, we've got the modern classics that pop up in the cocktail world because someone will make, you know, I don't know, the chartreuse swizzle, and then everyone else wants to make the chartreuse swizzle, or the naked and the famous, and these things wind up all over. But I don't think that's happening yet in the NA space.
Yeah.
But wouldn't that be cool though?
My goal.
To create like NA cocktails. Everyone has an NA cocktail and they say, hey, there's this one coming out of California that's so cool.
Yeah.
Let's have that on our menu.
Yeah, like NA classics that is not mimicking alcoholic.
It's
cocktail.
Not like
yeah,
a fake
classic.
Margarita
yeah.
or it's not. And that's actually, we're gonna get back to the pairing thing. That's something that I really love about what you do because I eat everything. I just can't have spicy, which makes me sad. But I eat everything. I eat meat. I eat vegan, I eat whatever. If it's good, it's good. And for a long time, again, I lived in the Bay Area, so vegan and vegetarianism was just always all over the place up there. But for such a long time, it felt like it was fake meat. They're just trying to make the same food, but with fake meat. And I'm like, what is the point of having the fake meat? If you miss meat, eat meat. If you're doing it for your heart, fine. But I would rather have a great meal that doesn't have those offensive ingredients, yeah, if they're a problem for you. And now we're finally in a place where I remember going somewhere with my husband, and I'm like, well, it's a vegan place, but they have great cocktails. And he's like, ooh, a vegan. And I'm all, in this day and age, if you do bad vegan, you get shut down.
Yeah, you have no excuse to
You cannot get away with it at yeah. this point. So I really appreciate that you're making non-alcoholic cocktails, because you're just using the word cocktails. It's a concoction. It's a combination of ingredients that you normally wouldn't think to put together to create this very unique flavor sensation, you know, whatever it may be, and mood and all of that. And I love that. And I am with you. I would love to see classic NA drinks start popping around.
Is my goal in my career, making multiple NA classics that, you know, that everybody in the nation wants to have. Put it on the menu.
Mm-hmm. So since you are a fake it till you make it, do you have a plan on how you're going to make this happen?
I mean,
the place where you work is getting a lot of attention right now. And
yes, I'm very thankful that a lot of guests at Cato don't drink alcohol, and they're very like proud and happy to come to Cato and just enjoy multiple NA cocktails. So I am in the works of, you know, creating different recipes, and we're getting there. We're getting there. Very
All right, close. So let's do that pairing now. Yeah. Think of some, it could be a piece of music or a song, and maybe one of the many delicious things you created that might go with it. See.
So, I was thinking about this earlier, actually. I'm glad you asked.
I figured you probably were.
Yeah.
You're like, what's it gonna be?
So there's this Jeff Beck song I love to play on guitar. It's called Come Dancing.
Oh, but it's Jeff Beck, because I only know the Kinks Come Dancing.
Yeah.
I don't know that one.
Yeah,
okay.
And
so
a lot of times, yeah.
What's the nature of the song? Because I don't know it. So is it like a real bluesy one? Is it like pretty rock and roll?
It's like funk.
Oh, it's a funky
kinda
one.
Like slow funky one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking this up as soon as I get home.
And you know, a lot of times when I taste something and it's perfect, that's kind of a song that is in my head.
It's like your celebratory song
when
you're. I love that you even have that.
Yeah, and I do like little dance for like 2 seconds and go back to reality.
Oh my God, that's so great. That makes me really happy that you do that, that you try it and you hear the song. It's like the, yes.
It is, yeah.
Okay. So then would you pair that with your most recent success, or is there a success in particular that's exceptionally funky?
I would pair that with my Melona Colada.
What is it?
The name of the drink is Melona Colada.
Oh, Melona Colada, okay.
Yeah, it's a shaved ice drink.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's also non-alcoholic.
I'm sorry, I just last night was at the Santa Anita Mall, and there was the whole shop with the Korean shaved ice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I wonder how much this is like the Hawaiian shaved ice, because I think it's milk-based, right? But Hawaiian is condensed milk,
yeah.
So I'm not sure.
I mean, this one is water ice.
Okay.
But we mix it with yogurt, fresh melon, the green melon, and Gewürztraminer juice. So like slightly tropical.
Nice.
And like a little bit of calpico to give like extra like tangy and milkiness.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like a milky, melony, tropical drink that I came up with very fast.
And when you came up with it, you like just did it and you tried it, and then Jeff Beck played in your head?
Yeah. I can't believe I just did that in like 3 minutes.
Well, that sounds like it was probably something from home too, in a way.
Yeah,
you took something from home and just kind of changed it up a little bit.
Yeah, we actually did it at Cato, and at the time we had alcoholic shaved ice drink, and one of our regulars who doesn't drink alcohol, she asked for, like, is there any shaved ice drink that is not alcoholic? And I was like,
Yeah.
Let's make it. And I just made it.
Wow. Yeah. That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah, that was one of the most satisfying moments in my career.
Oh, it's obviously it stayed on the menu then.
Yes.
Yay.
I mean, until the melon went out of season, but we're bringing it back in summer.
Okay. That's wonderful. I love that story because it's your creativity now pulling on your past, mm-hmm. your musical past, also home. There's the nostalgia factor,
yeah.
and just coming up with something that's very much your own.
Yeah.
And that sounds so perfect for what you've been doing. So that's amazing. Well, that's probably a good place to wrap things up.
Awesome.
But I don't know if you want to share with people your socials, website, whatever kind of information.
Yeah.
So they can know more about you or know where to find you if they mm-hmm. want to.
Yeah, you can find me at Drink Zero Proof for Instagram. So at Drink Zero Proof. Mm-hmm. And that's you can find information and website all through there.
Cool. Excellent. And then if they make it to Cato.
Yes.
They probably won't see you though, right? Are you behind the scenes just making the drinks and sending them out?
I am at the bar.
You're at the bar, okay.
Yeah, so yeah, they'll see me.
Okay, you'll be back there.
Well, thank you so much.
I want to thank Han for a wonderful conversation. It was really great to talk about her journey through creativity, really, creating these non-alcoholic cocktails and creating music, the passion that lies beneath all of that, because there is a lot. And passion, it can be tough. Sometimes it's thrilling and sometimes it's scary. And I appreciate all the honesty in discussing all of that stuff. If you want to follow her on the socials, it's at Drink Zero Proof. And if you want to see her in real life, make a reservation at Kato, K-A-T-O, the next time you're in Los Angeles for a really incredible culinary and drink experience. It's amazing. And I feel so fortunate that we actually both live in the same town. So this is one guest that I can visit more often, and I'm very, very happy about that. Thank you so much, Han. And if any of you want to check out some of her past life experience, she's put it in playlist form for you, and check out Music and Booze with Mo on Spotify, and you can find Han's Past Lives playlist for you. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.